Economic Growth Committee. We have bills before us today, members, and we might move the order a little bit in order to accommodate some more discussions and some language drafting. So we spent some time yesterday with Mr. Rakowski, and we were in mourning over the empty chair from our colleague from Winona. So we might have had a few jokes at your expense, Senator Miller, but we're all thrilled about your entrance into fatherhood. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Senator Metzen wanted a full report on
all the repealers on that.
Well, I thought you wanted a full report on the delivery.
Oh, we talked about that privately. But yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
So just
spit up on your lapel there.
But Senator Miller, so we are prepared as a committee to take up Senate File 1717. We had an amendment that we discussed as well, so I don't anticipate that this will take much more than a few minutes. But if you have anything that you'd like to say or anything else that Mr. Rakowski would like to say, but we welcome you back to St. Paul, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to say it was a little bit more difficult to leave this morning, but it's good to be back.
Mr. Rakowski, is this ready to go?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The author did speak to his local county assessor about the ag land provision, if you wanted to share anything on that.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, I did reach out to local county assessors, at least in southeastern Minnesota, and they checked with their statewide folks, and they had no issues with the language in Senate File 1717.
All right, so Senator Miller moves the A-12, which we discussed yesterday, A-12 to put the bill in the format that we discussed. All in favor of the A-12 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. A-12 is adapted to Senate File 1717. Senator Miller moves that Senate File 1717 be recommended to pass, and we send this to the Finance Committee, Senator Miller. Members, we have a quorum. Senator Metzen, do you have a question on the motion? Are you a little worried about it going to finance?
Yeah, I was wondering, Mr. Chairman, was it?
We had that fiscal note issue, Senator Metzen, with we talked to the woman from Public Safety, and as I understand, the Finance Committee is interested in reviewing this bill. So unless the author or Mr. Rakowski with the department have any anything to add on the Finance Department issue, Finance Committee issue?
The reason it's going to the Finance Committee, Senators, when we did the fiscal note review, it's anticipated that there's about 1,000 new licensees who would be brought into compliance this year as new businesses are starting up in the electrical and especially in the residential building contractors. So it's new revenue to the department to the tune of about $32,000. That's why it would be going to the Finance Committee.
Chairman, I didn't think that new revenue would cause you to go there, but that's always good, isn't it? New revenue?
It is.
Well, I mean, they're not appropriating anything, but if you want to make another stop, go ahead.
Senator Metzen, are you on the Finance Committee?
No, I purposely got off. No, that's fine. Move it to Finance.
All right, great. So, again, the motion is to recommend Senate File 1717 as amended to pass and move to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Great work, Senator Miller.
Thank you. They were only all that smooth.
Great work. And thank you, Mr. Rakowski. I know you've got some work to do on one of the other bills we're working on today. So unless I'm given a different sign, what I want to do is take up Senate File 1524. So, Senator Peterson, we're going to move you up because you're a legislative titan. You can handle this. And Senator Daley, there's a little more work going on his legislation. So Senate File 1524.
That could be yours.
Senator Peterson. And I know you have a few folks who want to testify. It's up to you, Senator Peterson, if you want to bring them up at the front end or come up right here. Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do have an author's amendment I need to
offer first, if I could?
Yeah, I think it's in there.
Do you have that on?
I just confirmed that, Senator Peterson, so it's the
A1.
A1? It is the A1, yep.
Should be right behind that.
Members, does everyone have the A1? Just look my way and give me a nod.
I can explain
it. It's one sentence, members.
Yep.
Senator Peterson, why don't you give us a little explanation?
Sure.
Make sure people have the paperwork.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is just a simple change, as the chairman referenced. It adds a sentence. You'll see there the sentence that reads, "This section does not preclude public entities from including additional requirements when soliciting public contracts for engineering services." Is the issue we needed to address there.
Senator Peterson, why don't we've got the amendment. Could you give us just a little more of a general description of the legislation to begin with and kind of put it into context?
Sure.
There?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1524 is a Board of Engineering policy bill. I think we all understand that it may not be a real exciting issue for most of you, but it's a critical issue. When you look at the work that goes into many of our infrastructure projects around the state, it's critical to this industry in general. In addition to engineers, this board also regulates architects, landscape architects, land surveyors, geoscientists, as well as interior designers is the industry group that kind of falls under this committee. And this committee will handle the general fund appropriations for this board, which is why we've been sent to talk to you about this. It specifically makes policy changes in the areas of ethics, education for these folks, strengthening the Practice Act, also for interior designers, some application fees for the board services, as well as some housekeeping and obsolete language that's going to be removed. This policy bill is a result of some of these changes that have been produced. The fiscal note that you'll see there, which I hope you'll recognize, actually saves the state and the residents of Minnesota money as well. That brings us to the author's amendment, and at this point, I'd like to see that move to get the bill in the form.
All right, members. So Senator Peterson offers the A1. Moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 1524. Questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted, Senator Peterson. So we now have the A1 on Senate File 1524.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have some guests here today to talk specifically about this bill and give you some further information of why we believe you should move it forward and support it. Today we have Ms. Cubes, who's a past board member of the Board of Engineering, and she'll talk about some of the provisions of this bill, and then as well Mr. Malm is a professional engineer who works under some of these requirements right now, and will address some of the changes that will specifically relate to engineers and his industry.
So we'll have Ms. Cubes go first. Ms. Cubes, welcome to the committee, and please, I hope you'll refrain from talking about any law school stories that you and I might share from our past days.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Peterson, thank you very much. My name is indeed Christine Cubes. I am currently a public member on the board and the immediate past chair of the Board of Licensure. I'm accompanied today by our Executive Director, Doreen Frost, behind me here, as well as other members of the board and staff of the board. I'm honored to be here with you today. We represent a board of licensing that protects the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens of the state by providing a reasonable assurance that the licensees, Senator Peterson outlined all of them, I won't say them all again, architects, engineers, et cetera, there are various professions that are governed and licensed by the board. But we provide a reasonable assurance that all of those licensees and certificate holders will be competent, ethical practitioners with the necessary knowledge and skills appropriate to their title or role. And the initiative for the legislation before you today began in 2009 when the board participated in a national dialogue on ethics among organizations that examine and license design professionals, calling for an improvement and awareness of the integration of ethics and professional practice and taking examinations. And we brought that issue back to Minnesota in 2009, and we began outreach with our licensees. All of the board members started teaching on the importance of the statutes and rules that we have in place that govern their practice and their ethical practice in their professions, as well as in obtaining their licensure. As a natural outgrowth, the board perceived the need and the wisdom in dedicating some of the continuing education that all the licensees must procure to ethics. And in preparing the bill, we identified a few other areas that we thought would be worthwhile addressing. For instance, strengthening the Practice Act, setting fees for services rendered by the board, and cleaning up some obsolete language. Kind of while we're at it, we'll take care of all of these things. Your materials do include a summary that your staff has prepared of the proposed changes, and I would like to walk you through those each by each. First, Minnesota law currently requires that licensees complete 24 hours of continuing education every biennium in order for them to renew their licenses. The bill proposes dedicating 2 out of those 24 for ethics. It is noteworthy that we have done our grassroots work on this issue with all of the various associations that represent the licensees. That would be MSPE, ACEC, AIA, etc. And all, I can say confidently and very gratefully, all of those organizations support this bill and the ethics requirement. Again, 2 out of those 24. Next, the bill strengthens and clarifies the Practice Act by limiting the use of PE only to be used by professional engineers. Now, you may have seen professionals who say, "My name is Brian Malm, PE," on his business card or as he signs or as he certifies a drawing. It is critical for the clarity and lack of confusion to the public that only licensed, registered engineers use the term PE. And this bill would allow for that to happen, that would be reserved only for those who have obtained licensure and not for any others. For the next point on professional practice, I'm going to defer to Mr. Malm from MSPE.
Thank you, Christine. Mr. Chair.
Malm, welcome. Welcome to the committee. If you just give your full name and organization for the tape, we're ready to go.
My name is Brian Malm, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers. Mr. Chair, Senators, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here today representing the 1,100 members of the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers. We're here today to speak in support of the board bill and specifically a provision in the bill that would prevent licensed professional engineers from having to obtain unnecessary additional licenses or certifications above and beyond the professional engineering license in order to practice engineering. Licensed professional engineers practicing in a variety of disciplines across Minnesota work both in industry, construction, education, government, and private practice today. In order to become licensed, engineers must obtain a bachelor's degree, a 4-year bachelor's degree from an accredited engineering program. Following graduation, they take a comprehensive 8-hour exam. Following that exam, they work for 4 years in industry or private practice or government or one of those areas under a licensed professional engineer. Following that experience, they take another comprehensive 8-hour exam to become licensed. As Christine mentioned, once licensed, 24 hours of continuing education are required every 2-year licensure period. The provisions of the engineering license are enforced by the Board of Licensure. Engineers are required to only practice in those areas in which they are competent based on their education and experience. Violations of those provisions of the license result in disciplinary action by the board, which may include suspension or revocation of the license and a civil penalty. As you can see, the professional engineering license is vital to the professional engineer in his practice as an engineer. It represents the livelihood of professional engineers. So it's in the professional engineer's interest to conform to all of those licensure requirements. We are a self-policing profession from that standpoint with the Board of Licensure's help. We feel that those education and experience requirements combined with the enforcement power of the Board of Licensure are adequate to ensure that licensed professional engineers are qualified to practice engineering and is adequate to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public. Requiring additional licenses or certifications beyond the professional engineering license will only make it more costly to do business and to practice engineering. Prior to this hearing, we did some grassroots efforts as well. We contacted various state agencies to determine whether any of the agencies that deal with licensed professional engineers would be opposed to this particular section of the bill. We contacted the Department of Transportation, Pollution Control Agency, Department of Health, Department of Labor and Industry, as well as the Department of Administration. We only heard two concerns during that outreach. Number one, agencies were concerned that certifications or license programs that currently exist and apply to engineers would be eliminated. That concern is addressed with the effective date provision in the bill, so this would not apply to certifications or license programs that already exist. The second concern we heard was that agencies did not want to be limited in the requirements that they could place on engineers when they are hiring engineers for public contracts for engineering. And that concern was addressed by the author's amendment that was just proposed by Senator Peterson. Lastly, while we feel that in the majority of cases, requiring additional licenses or certifications beyond the professional engineering license is not necessary, we recognize that statutes should have foresight and that there may be cases in the future where an agency or someone would want to require an additional requirement. And you'll note that the language in the bill would allow that, provided that it is proven that the professional engineering license is not adequate. So it would help to eliminate any of these additional certifications that just aren't necessary. It would be that wouldn't be necessary because the PE license is adequate. Most of the certifications that exist that do currently apply to engineers do not apply to engineers because they were specifically developed for engineers. They were developed for non-professionals who need to practice in a certain subset of engineering to benefit the public. Of those certifications that do currently apply, we don't believe that those certifications apply because they were specifically intended to apply to professional engineers. They apply to professional engineers almost by accident. The fact as to whether they should apply to engineers was not considered when those certifications exist. The language in this bill would prevent that from happening in the future and would require that if a certification is proposed, that a determination be made as to whether it should apply to licensed professional engineers or not. Closing, I'd like to thank the committee on behalf of MSP for considering approval of this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Ms. Cubes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Malm, for your comments from MSP. The next portion of the bill that you have in front of you requires licensees to keep their continuing education paperwork for 4 years. I know this sounds ministerial, and it is, but it serves a good purpose because in the event of an audit, this would ensure that the licensees would have the data that they would need to be able to establish that they had indeed complied with their continuing education. Next, the bill provides for fees for services rendered by the board. First of all, certified interior designers currently pay no fees for certification, which is a product of an earlier oversight that needs correction. Secondly, there would be a $25 fee for verification of records for licensees who apply for licensure in other states. You may be familiar with either it's specifically engineers and architects are oftentimes licensed in multiple jurisdictions. And in order for those jurisdictions to verify that those individuals are properly licensed here, they reach back to the state board here, who then goes through a process of verifying that data. The state board staff spends one full day a week verifying those records, but there is no fee yet assessed for that service, so we would propose a $25 fee. And I would note also that that fee is consistent with our neighboring states. It's right in the middle. Some charge $20, some charge $30, $35. We chosen $25 as a nice round number. Next, there is a $100 fee per examination administered by the board. There used to be examinations that were administered by the national boards who write the examination, but now in some cases they defer that administration to the board, so we would ask for a fee for our board time. A note that these fees are not increases. It's a mistake to think that they're an increase. They are simply placing a fee where a fee has not yet existed for services that are being rendered by the board. And finally, we're taking the opportunity to clean up some obsolete language. For instance, I won't go through all of it. I'm sure you have it in your records in the summary of the bill. But, for instance, there are references to old accrediting bodies, like old licensing bodies for some of the design professions that no longer exist. Or there is a reference to the board developing examination questions. There may have been a time eons ago when the board did participate in that practice, but now it is set by the national examination boards, and the board does not have any participation. So in short, the bill provides clarity on a number of levels and is good for the public and for the professions. And again, I thank you for your attention and your consideration of the bill, and we will stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cube. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. One, I just want clarification on. I think you answered it, which has to do with how licensees keep track of their credits. I know in regards to insurance, those licensures have been a little bit problematic because in Minnesota we have these specific things, ethics course, different types of company-sponsored, non-company-sponsored, and yet our CIRCON system that manages those things does not adequately distinguish between the different types of credits, and that has caused insurance producers great angst and problems, actually, where they thought their licenses their continuing ed had been met, but in reality it hadn't. But I don't think you have that type of a system. It's on the honor system, is that right? And kind of just explain that, just clarify that.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, that's correct. We keep track of those continuing education credits ourselves. Each licensure period we're required to submit to the board how many credits we have obtained. The documentation of that is kept with each engineer. The board does do random audits where you are required to submit a record of attendance at the continuing education sessions as well as the content of those sessions, so it is policed that way. But as far as keeping track of the continuing education hours, the engineer himself is required to keep track of that on their own.
Thank you. And just one more question, Mr. Chair. We've talked a lot about the engineers. I just want to clarify the other professions that are receiving that are affected by this legislation and that will be paying maybe a $100 fee where they have not before. Do you have letters of support from all of those organizations as well?
Ms. Cubes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, thank you for the question. We have received letters of support from the organizations on the bill as proposed. They have all received a summary where we've detailed all of the elements of the bill, and we have received letters of support.
Thank you.
Chair.
Sorry, Senator Metz.
Yeah, and piggyback and just a little bit on this, Mr. Chairman, the continuing education requirements. I thought in other areas we allowed these credits to be carried over. And why are we not allowing these credits to be? I mean, you earned them. Maybe you earn them all in 1 year. Why can't you carry them over? What's the reason?
Mr. Chair and Senator, thank you for the question. The idea of the ethics not being carried over, is that your question?
Well, it looks like, Mr. Chairman, it looks like, unless it's in the details in the Section 9, it doesn't talk in Section 9 about the ethics. It does talk about the ethics 2 hours in Section 8.
Correct.
But in 9, it says, I don't think it has anything to do with the ethics part of it, because that's clarified in Section 8. So anyway, okay. Why can't you carry your credits over?
As a general rule, Mr. Chair and Senator, thank you. As a general rule, the continuing education may be carried, some of it may be carried over, but only a limited amount, which is 12 credits can be carried over from one biennium to the other. But the ethics, we're saying it's only 2 credits and they cannot be carried over. They need to be handled in your biennium and they cannot be carried over. But 12 may be carried over from one to the other of the general continuing education. Okay?
I get it. Yes, Mr. Chairman, yeah, you're accepting the ethics part of it. I get it.
Thank you.
Senator Peterson, any other comments or other witnesses that you want to bring forward today?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not aware of any at this point.
true, we'd certainly entertain a motion we'd like this to move to Finance Committee.
Okay, Senator Peterson, let me just ask among the folks in the room here, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate File 1524?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jensen.
This bill does not appropriate any money for the expenses of doing this work. From the fiscal note, it's $9,000. And we have capped their appropriation, you know, during the regular process. So they would have to absorb the $9,000, which is about 1% of their fiscal year 13 appropriation.
So, Mr. Jensen, is it still appropriate for this bill to go to Finance, or are you making an argument we should do some more work here at this point?
Well, Mr. Chairman, you could do more work here, and in a sense, if you have a bill coming later that spends money, this here would be the savings that could pay for another building, a bill that spends money. Just a thought for you, Mr. Chairman.
It's kind of fun.
Mr. Jensen, thank you. So we've got $9,000 in the bank.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the revenue is $38,000, which could be spent.
Way to go, Senator Peterson.
Was it a tax? No, it was a fee.
Mr. Chair and members, now you know Mr. Jensen's in my corner as well.
All right, I understand Finance does want to see this bill. So any further discussion, members? So Senator Peterson moves that Senate File 1524, as amended, be recommended to pass and move to the Senate Finance Committee. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. Thank you, Senator Peterson. Thank you, Ms. Cubes. Thank you, Mr. Malm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Come home, go baby.
Okay. You done.
Thank you.
So, members, I've asked Senator Daley to give us at least an overview of Senate File 1964, and as I understand it, even in the last half hour, there are further discussions on this bill, such that we will not be acting on this bill today, which comes as a surprise to the chair and the staff. So, Mr. Senator Daley, if you can just kind of set the table for us and give us an outline and where you see this going. And I know Mr. Rakowski will kind of lay down some history here as well. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. This was a bill that was brought to me by Mr. Rakowski, and very happy to author this, to lead the effort on this. As some members know, four people have died. They have fallen to their deaths in the last approximately 5 years, since I believe June of 2007. And my background, being in the military, safety is really important. It's the first thing we think about. Safety first, safety always. And I'm proud to author this, and looking forward to working out some of the differences in language that we need to have here that we have not quite arrived at yet. I thought it was ready. Some folks have brought to our attention that there may be some issues, and we're working through those. The issue was first brought to the attention of then Commissioner Steve Sviggum during the 2010 legislative session. And rather than drafting legislation at that time, the commissioner decided to assemble a group, an advisory group made of contractors, building owners, and others to recommend safety initiatives. And they met four times in 2010 and made several recommendations to Representative Jim Dabney at that time, who had approached the commissioner about the issue, though nothing happened in legislation in 2010 or 2011, last year. So last summer, another worker fell to his death. And you know, making that the fourth fatality in 5 years. So much to his credit, Commissioner Ken Peterson said, you know, we've got to just stop thinking about this. We need to do something about this. So he initiated some of the recommendations put forth by the advisory group, and most of those recommendations were adopted earlier this month through a new OSHA standard, which was supported by labor and industry alike. Right now, this bill addresses permanent anchoring systems for new or structurally renovated roofs. So the new roofs, that's not an issue. There's no dispute on that. It's the structurally renovated roofs that we're working through definitions and exactly what that looks like. At least that's my understanding at this point. And perhaps the height of the buildings, right now it's written as 4 stories or higher, and we're trying to determine if that is the right height to include this in the building code. With that, Mr. Chairman, I hand it over to Mr. Rutkowski.
Thank you.
Mr. Rutkowski, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be back. The Building Owners and Management Associations are two associations in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the St. Paul director informed me of a couple of, the what-if kind of scenarios just yesterday morning, and we've been working on it ever since. The bill is also being authored in the House by Representative Kurt Stensrud of Eden Prairie, who owns a window washing company and is also very supportive of stricter training and anchoring systems. The issue that was brought that is in the OSHA standard deals with training for these workers, and some of you might have seen that Channel 9 investigative report from last August, and the workers, and there is a gentleman here who is a window washer. If you'd like to hear a few comments from him on why he supports the bill, I think that would be helpful in understanding this issue more. But training is pretty lax for some of these companies, and especially not so much in the downtown areas, but in the suburban areas. In fact, 3 of the 4 deaths were in the suburbs. So OSHA, since the last fatality, I believe for over a year now, is really kind of focused like a laser beam on improving safety in this area.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. What happened on these deaths? Did the cable break? Was operator error? How did these people die?
Mr.
Rutkowski. And will the proposed solution solve the problem?
Well, training, Mr. Chairman and Representative Tomasoni, will solve the problem. Having permanent anchor systems on new buildings and on structurally renovated older buildings, according to the contractors, said, yeah, that will help. But training is probably the most significant part of it. Some of these, a couple of the gentlemen who fell to their deaths have been doing it for, I understand, 3 or 4 years. So I would, without, some of these are still being, they're private information, so I can't really get into some of the details on what you're asking me because the company's contested it. But one would, you'd assume that if you've been doing it for 3 or 4 years that it was an equipment failure. But I can't really say about one way or
the
other.
Did the wind blow too hard? Because
I'm not
trying to oppose anything here, but what I'm trying to find out is what caused the problem, and then is what's being proposed going to solve the problem, or is it just adding more burden to whatever they do? I want this to be really safe, but I just don't understand what happened in regards to. I mean, sometimes when you see it on television in a movie, somebody hit the wrong button and the ramp goes down like this, and then they end up falling off. But I don't know if that's what's happened here or what's happened. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, I can discuss this with our OSHA director, and when the bill comes back to the committee, I can provide the cause of the death for some of them, I think, because enough years have passed.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One second, Senator Peterson. So I do want to allow Ms. Hani to to address us at some point. You've actually taken the initiative to come to the microphone without even being asked. So was it particular to Senator Tomasoni's question?
It was not, Senator. If you would like me to leave the table, I'd be
happy to. It's great to have you here. So let's go to Senator Peterson first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who would be in the best position to answer this question. My sense is that one concern I would have would be the code changes relating to multifamily housing. Is your intent to include that where you're getting into the height issues? I apologize. I haven't had a chance to get through this language fully. So.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, that's a good point. The chief building official for the state of Minnesota, who is employed at Labor and Industry, I talked to him yesterday why they came up with the four stories is to exempt homes and virtually all multi-housing. Most apartment buildings, new ones, are three stories or four stories or less. So they would be exempt. That the building code currently exempts, does not allow homes of four stories or more. That's how they picked it. And that's all I have to say about
that. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, to follow up, so a current design oftentimes you'll see right now is parking on the first level with three stories of residential units above that. I hope I'm not getting into too much detail, but so that type of building would be exempt from these?
That is correct, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Hani, welcome to the committee, and what can you tell us about this issue and or this legislation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your indulgence. My name is Kathy Hani. I am a lawyer at Fagree Baker Daniels, and my client is St. Paul Building Owners and Managers Association. And since you were discussing their concerns, unfortunately, our executive director, Matt Anfang, is out of town. He actually went over to
Wait,
yes, thank you on the trip. So I apologize. I think perhaps because of the nature of downtown St. Paul buildings, it's some of their unique nature that's causing us some problems in trying to come to an agreement on this. Mr. Anfang served on the task force that worked on this all summer, spent a lot of time on it, and came away with a different sense of where we were going on the bill. But if you think about downtown St. Paul, just to illuminate some of the issues, for example, the Golden Rule building has these big cornices that overhang, and the way they wash their windows is they've got, I don't know what the machine is called, but it's
scissor
a
machine.
No, they say it's not a scissor. Oh, it's a different name. But they've got a machine that they routinely use that brings the window washers up the six stories or whatever they need to do to wash the windows. They are also contemplating putting a new roof on their building. And they would like to make the case that the legislation with a new roof or a majority of the roof, however it's resolved, would require them to put anchors on their building with the new roof. That's the roof they think costs about $500,000 or $600,000. The anchors would cost an additional $200,000. And they make the case that those window washers are less safe coming down and trying to get under the cornices than they are if they're in this thing that lifts them up. So that's one example. Again, I think it's sort of the unique nature of some of the downtown St. Paul buildings. Secondly, the First National Bank building has windows that they wash the outside from the inside because they rotate them. And they, if they put a new roof on, would have to do anchors. And again, you're really putting a building like that's an older building, and we've got a little bit of distressed real estate in downtown St. Paul, into investing money in a way that doesn't make any sense. So we're just trying to work through some of those issues, but I think they're somewhat unique maybe to St. Paul. So thank you for letting me walk you through that, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we have some unique situations for downtown, and I think Senator Daley alluded to the fact that, with this situation with Minneapolis and St. Paul, or the testifier, I don't remember, is better, but we're having some problems with the newer buildings in suburban areas. It occurs to me that we may have to kind of think about just a specific language that excludes some of the historic buildings or unique architectural features of some buildings, and that will do that, correct? Is it your view that we can continue to do this for the overwhelming majority of buildings and new construction with specific language that excludes architectural buildings that may have to look for alternative options for safety.
Ms. Hine.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, absolutely. We are fully supportive of anchors on new buildings. We are supportive of anchors when you're totally replacing, it's a whole new roof. Then the question becomes, should there be a couple of exceptions for the unique kinds of situations that I outlined, or different treatment if you're just doing a partial roof? So that's really the crux, I think, of where we're at in the conversations.
Senator Daley to that, and then I'll go back to Senator Torres-Ray. Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't going to make a follow-up to that. I was just going to recognize that we have a member from the other body, and I was hoping that you would allow him to...
Yeah, I wasn't going
to
do that.
Hoping you would allow him to make a couple of points, because this is what he does for business.
Let's take care of Senator Torres-Ray's points, questions, or comments, and then we'll welcome what's-his-name.
Thank you,
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Daley, as I am not clear about really what are the questions or the issues that prevent us from taking a vote now. Is this the only issue? Because I do see some representatives from some of the workers that have worked in these cases, and I would love to hear from them as to whether or not what you have proposed actually takes care of this issue, because the training issue seems to be an important component. But is this language adequate enough, or is that the historic buildings the only concern you have, or not clear about what else is in question with respect to the proposed language that you have before us?
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Torres-Ray, the work that they're still trying to resolve, the efforts that they're making right now between the parties behind the scenes here, is on the reconstruction, alteration, or repair aspect of it. Not so much, not new buildings at all. It's the reconstruction aspect that they're working on. And the piece that she just mentioned, as far as those older, unique buildings, mm-hmm. Trying to find language in. And I have to admit, the training piece that Mr. Rakowski mentioned this morning, that's the first time I've heard about the training piece. So I'll have to circle back with him and discuss that specifically, because we hadn't discussed that before he mentioned it this morning.
Thank you.
Senator Daley, thank you. So, Mr. Representative Stensrud, thank you for joining us. So we've been made aware that there's some conversation going on between multiple parties here and some more language being drafted and potential amendments. Also aware that the other body has a committee dealing with this issue this afternoon. So there's kind of multiple moving pieces here. We at least wanted to give Senator Daley an opportunity to kind of lay out the bill and let the department at least educate the members. If we're assuming we can't act on it this morning, given where discussions are. But I'm telling you, our calendar is about to get really crammed, and so I want to use every minute we can to at least get us ready to take action. And so you haven't been in the room since we started this discussion, but if there's kind of some general points you want to make about the legislation, I guess I'd ask Mr. Rakowski to come back up as well. So, Representative Sandrew, welcome to the committee.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am, in my real life, I like to think of, I have a window cleaning company. I don't do high-rise, but I have worked with and subcontracted on some projects, some high-rise window cleaners. I've been on a lot of roofs, and I've seen some with anchors and some with anchors you wouldn't want to, you know, risk your life on securing yourself. So I think it's important that the new construction, you know, that's an obvious one. When you build a new building, you should build it with adequate, you know, safety tie-offs. So that seems to make sense, and I have had discussions with the commissioner and administration. It sounds like we can come up with some comfort language on the reconstruction projects. It certainly is not the intent that if you have a small repair on a small corner of a building, that you would be forced to somehow put in hundreds of thousands of dollars of anchors across, you know, an entire roof structure that you're not going to be exposing the substructure. So if we can come up with some comfort language, and I think we can, I'll be talking with our house research in the next couple of hours before I present this before Commerce in the House. And I think that we'll probably come up with some accommodations in language that would work with the building owners, with BOMA. And it sounds like there's no conflict. So I think if we come up with the right language, we'll have peace in the valley. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Sure. Senator Metzen.
Maybe, Mr. Chairman, would there be something like if there's a unique situation, just a thought, instead of writing everything into law, where they could, the building owner could appeal to the commissioner for an exemption, something like that, if there's a kind of a unique, and because they're the professionals over there with OSHA and all of these issues. And just one more thought, that instead of writing everything in here, you have an avenue to appeal or to try to get out of it.
Thank you, Senator.
Something to think about.
Mr. Rakowski.
Thanks. If I can amplify on Senator Metzen's point, the purpose of this bill is to for the legislature to instruct the department to adopt whatever language we come up to, what we agree to, in the 2012 building code, which is currently in process right now. It's just we're beginning the process, and we plan to conclude it sometime later this year. So Steve Hernick, who's our chief building official, said that, yes, it's indeed possible that a circumstance would allow for the commissioner to entertain an exemption.
Thank you.
And Mr. Rakowski, so make sure I have this right. So you had a working group on this over the summer into the fall.
Of 2010, correct.
It goes back to 2010.
Yes.
I assume building owners were a part of that working group, and it sounds like from the testimony of Mr. Anfang, who represents the St. Paul group, was.
Yes.
I know we were part of a conversation last fall leading up to this session that this was one of the department's priorities. So I know Senator Daley's ready to work, but it sounds like the bill's not ready. Are there, Mr. Rakowski, is anything else that the committee needs to know at this point? Is there anyone else from the audience that's with us this morning that should that could help with the background to this legislation?
Well, we do have an individual who came here who is employed in the window washing business. If you'd like to hear,
please.
All right, thank you.
Good morning, and welcome to the committee. If you just give your name.
Good morning, Chairman and committee. My name is Kevin Ingbritson. I've been in the business for 18 years. I guess what I'd like to say is that anchorage, many times when workers come to a roof that doesn't have anchorage, they will choose other methods to get the job done, you know, and there's pressure from employers to do the same thing at cheaper costs. If they have anchorages, it'll considerably increase there not being incident, death, or injury. Because if you have something that's available to you, you're gonna choose that, the safe method. And that's all I have to say.
Mr. Ingbritson?
Ingbritson, yes.
Were you part of this department working group, or how have you connected in with this legislation?
Oh, I'm a steward for the union, and okay. Somewhat, yeah.
So that's how you've been following this?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Senator Daley, I guess leave any concluding remarks that you have at this point. We were assuming that this was ready to go, so I'd ask everyone in the room or out in the hallway who are still working on this to expedite that work. And Senator Daley, if there's anything you need from the committee or committee staff, we are ready to go. If you need us to push certain parties, we will do that. other than the general timeline, which should act to push all these parties. There's been a lot of work and discussions and meetings about this topic and this bill. So, Senator Daley, anything further?
Mr. Chairman, I would just expect that by 14:30 hours today, 2:30 in civilian time, we'll have an agreement, peace in the valley, presented in the House, and all will be well.
There will be peace.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Daley. Members' committees adjourned.
Quick.
Another half hour.
They got to do their work.
It's not going to happen
next week.
Yeah.